I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for occurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text LOSE to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text LOSE to 200-300. That's LOSE to 200-300. LOSE to 200-300.
Welcome to Stupidity, home of the greatest media mind ever to walk the planet.
Okay, so here's the deal. He's a true icon in every sense of the word.
He's loved and feared more than any being to grace this planet.
There's two guys. A man with a voice that sounds like Barry White and Beyonce had a Jewish baby.
God himself would pay $39.99 for a cameo. Fact of the matter is, you are about to embark on a transcendent experience that can only be described as psychological nudity.
This is Stugatz, and this is Stupidity.
Here we go, Jim.
Tony!
Mikey, I have a question for you.
What do you got?
Are you into trash talking? Do you love trash talking? When you play sports, do you trash talk?
It depends on the sport, but my go-to was always to get you mad by laughing at you and not saying a word, and it just made people so mad.
Wait, so let me just paint this picture. You would play like a pickup game of basketball, and you would just laugh at the guy that you were guarding, which is you playing basketball is a funny visual in itself. I love you, but I had to say it.
No, you're right, but yeah. I was thinking more when I played football. Like, if I was playing football, you know, I'd block somebody and then, or I'd beat them for a sack or something, and they'd get mad and start trash talking. I just laugh at them. Right. And then it just became this whole thing. I always like to go out of the box. My nephew actually, he sings Frozen to people he's guarding as a D1 athlete.
Really?
He sings Let It Go. It's amazing. And they get so mad at him because
he won't stop. What sports does he play?
He's a D1 lacrosse player at Ohio State.
All right, so he's at Ohio State, a D1 lacrosse player. This is who, by the way?
This is my nephew.
Okay, so this is your nephew. I have to make an introduction to someone I know who plays on the Ohio State women's team, okay? So remind me of that later.
Let's do that.
And what you're telling me is he runs around and he sings what to the opponents?
Frozen, Let It Go, whatever, whichever one he thinks of, and they get really mad because he won't stop.
Okay. Really, get your nephew on the podcast, by the way. I want to talk to him about this. Okay. And so he claims that it works, right?
I've seen it work. I've actually seen it work. They'll throw a punch from nowhere because he won't stop singing Let It Go.
So he's trying he's trying to get inside their head by, you know, just, well, by singing and giving off that he's crazy, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
It's good.
A little bit.
Good. It's a heady play by him. I like this nephew of yours. Get him on, okay? Seriously. I ask this because we're going to have Rafi Cohan on, who has written a book called Trash Talk. It's the only book ever written about trash talking, I believe. And there is like an art, a science, a psychology to all of this that I think you and I are going to be fascinated with because we love trash talking. I don't personally if I'm playing, I don't like when someone's talking trash to me. I'm not good enough at anything to talk trash to them, okay? But I do love a good trash talk, you know?
It's become such a part of the game. I'm so interested in this interview on how to do it, on how how it affects people so much just to have somebody talking to them.
Right. We had Christian Wilkins on the main show, the Dolphins defensive tackle. He's great, by the way, but he's a trash talker. He's a noted trash talker. He loves it. He embraces it, but he really gets into it. Like, he spots a weakness. He looks for weaknesses in your game, and then he goes after that player. I love that. That's the kind of shit I want to talk about right now with Rafi, you know?
See, the thing about trash talk is you have to be good enough to, like, if you're Mike Golick and you start talking trash, nobody cares. But right. if you're Reggie White and you start trash talking, then it becomes a thing.
Right. Or you just let your play, you know, do the talking for you. But sure, what fun
there
is
guys
that?
That do that. No, that's not fun. I mean,
I want to, if I was so good at something, so good at a sport, I would want to beat you so badly, but also let you know verbally that I am beating you as it's happening. That's it. But I'm not good enough, you know? I'm not good enough. Neither is Rafi Cohen. No. But he's a good writer. He's a hell of a writer. And he wrote a book called Trash Talk, and he joins us now. Stu Gatz here from my friends over at Miller Lite. A lot's changed over the years. One thing that hasn't, the great taste of Miller Lite. Another thing that hasn't changed is that it's less filling. So, what is the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite sparked this debate in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. For me, it is simple. What I want out of my light beer is ice cold and great taste, and that's exactly what I get from the original light beer, Miller Lite. Miller Lite keeps it simple, undebatable quality, great taste, only 96 calories. It's the beer that strips away everything you don't need and holds on to what matters most, a light beer that tastes like beer. You don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/stew, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Rafi Cohen. He has a new book out, Trash Talk. He's a great writer. We'll get to why he wrote the book besides money in just a second. But I am wondering, because the book is out today wherever you buy your books, Rafi, I am wondering, when the day comes, and the day is here as we tape this, when you're releasing a book, are you checking sales nonstop? Like, what are you doing? Take us through today, because I'd be checking nonstop to make sure people were buying my book.
Yeah, on the one hand, you're definitely lying if you say you don't care at all about, you know, the moving units and the ticker and all that. But at the same time, there's not actually a good metric that you can check on the day of sales. The best you can do is go look at like Amazon ranks, and that's such a small snapshot that it may be capturing what's happening and it might not. So if this is my second book. For my first book, I was definitely on there just hitting refresh every 5 minutes and just seeing how things were going. This time I'm trying to restrain myself and, you know, give the process a little bit more time to play out.
How'd the first book do?
It did well. It went well, critically acclaimed, about sports stadiums, and, you know, found a nice audience.
Very nice. Why'd you write this book? Besides the money, because we're all writing books for money, okay? So that goes without saying, and I don't mean to put you in a bad spot, but why'd you decide to write this particular book?
Yeah, obviously everyone knows that writing is the path to wealth in society these days. Well, the truth is, so the book, right, is about trash talk, and trash talk, I mean, I don't know, like, I know I can curse and it'll get bleeped, but I don't know, like, how much cursing I can do here.
You can curse as much as you want, and it won't get bleeped because Billy's not here this week. I mean,
I have to do it.
Oh, I was going to say Billy, but, you know, anyway.
Yeah, no, Billy, you're right. You're actually right about that. And just curse. Let it fly, man. Mikey A will take care of it.
Well, the truth is, because trash talk is awesome. That's why I wanted to write this book. I mean, I grew up in the 90s. I'm a kid of the 90s. Trash talk was at its peak in the 90s. And obviously it existed before that. And you can find examples of people talking before that. But like literally as a phenomenon with the title and the term of trash talk, that is 1990s. The term was coined in 1980s, basically, and it hit its peak around 1993. You know, it became this kind of like trend story worthy phenomenon. Sports editors were assigning long form features about it. Everybody was talking about trash talk, and it was in the air. And, you know, I was fascinated by these guys that were just talking trash on the court. You know, guys like Gary Payton, you know, you see them and there's something edgy about them. There's something charismatic about them. And I was really drawn to that. It was very magnetic seeing these guys and not necessarily understanding everything that was going on, like what was really happening on the court with the crap that they were talking. And then, you know, as you get older, I play amateur sports. I played sports in high school, and you see that there's all these various sort of functionalities and permutations of trash talk, and kind of start to wonder, well, what's that all about? And nobody had ever written a book about trash talk before, amazing as that is. So that I figured this might be my lane.
I'm curious at what point, I'm sure you studied the history of all this, at what point it sort of went from something that was like frowned upon to something that was considered part of the game or part of your game, at least.
Good question.
Yeah, it's a great question. And the truth is that I think it's always a cycle, because trash talk has existed since the beginning of time, basically since the Bible, since the Homeric poems. Guys were talking crap to each other. David to Goliath, he was talking. That's how he got him within range of his shepherd's sling. You know,
what was he saying? I would love to know the shit he was talking. I
mean, he said, I'm going to strike you down and cut off your head. And then, right. Goliath gets upset. Yeah. And your mom, too.
Right. Classic David. I mean,
classic David talk. You know, and so it's always been around.
Right.
And it's existed throughout time and across cultures. And at various times, we kind of recognize it for what it is, which is the language of competition. It's a way that we can communicate when we're competing against one another. And at other times, we kind of don't recognize what's happening. And that's kind of what happened in the U.S. in the 1980s and into the 90s, as the sort of new form of modern trash talk was emerging from, you know, basketball playground courts, out of the culture of hip hop. You know, it's become sort of like a racialized and stigmatized thing. And right after these trend stories pop up and everyone's talking about, whoa, look at this, everyone's talking crap, then suddenly people are saying, wait a minute, this is unsportsmanlike. We should put an end to this. This is somehow like a moral flaw that you're exhibiting. And so there was definitely an enormous backlash as a result of that in the 1990s, and has continued on. You know, someone like Gary Payton, I think, is a really important figure in the evolution of modern trash talk and sort of our conception of it, because he was getting texts. You know, the Sonics hired a private detective before they would draft him, you know, as the number two overall pick, I believe. He was initially left off the 1996 U.S. basketball roster, the Olympic roster, because this is a quote from Sports Illustrated. I'm not going to get it exactly right, but basically, like, they wanted guys who weren't going to cause an international incident. And so Gary Payton was not that guy. But he dealt with that, and he lost, you know, commercial and marketing opportunities. But he didn't change his game. He kept talking the same he was always talking. And ultimately, he helped change the perception of that. And it became kind of a thing that was cool and accepted instead of deviant and, like, you know, somehow like a moral failure of some kind. So
is Gary Payton considered the greatest trash talker of all time?
I don't think you can put anyone above Muhammad Ali. I mean, I think, really? I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, GP is great and one of my personal favorites, just because he is so uniquely and unapologetically himself. I had respect for Gary Payton before I started reporting this book, but then after talking to him, after talking to his former coaches, well, George Karl in particular, and guys who played with him, you just realize Gary is a maniac on the floor in the best possible way. I mean, right. George Karl literally told me that he would play him for 48 minutes some games because he did not want to take him out and have to hear his shit. Like, that is why he would play Gary Payton for 48 minutes.
Give me some examples of the pettiest trash talking that you unearthed as you were putting this book together.
Okay. Well, I mean, what's interesting about the pettiness of trash talking is, I mean, the first person who comes to mind to me, of course, is, or of course, or not of course, is Kevin Durant. And that's just, you know, if you're going to have, you know, burner accounts and you're replying to guys online, you know, that's kind of as petty as it gets. But I'll just say one thing about petty before I give you my favorite petty, you know, moment of pettiness.
Okay.
And that is, so there was a, believe it or not, there was a study that came out of the University of Pennsylvania and Georgetown a few years ago that looked at trash talk in the workplace. And one of the things they found, one of the effects that it has, is it makes you, the target of the trash talk, more motivated, not to win, but to see your opponent lose.
Right.
And the way I read that is extreme, is that means you're extremely petty. That you have reached peak level of pettiness. Well, the point is, right, that pettiness is baked into trash talk. If you're talking there, you are introducing pettiness to the competition. So actually, I'll give you two stories. One is there's a golfer, a Mexican-American golfer named Abraham Answer, right? And he was playing, I think he was asked before the President's Cup, he was playing for Mexico. And he said, someone asked him, if you could play for anyone, if you could play, you know, be paired up with anyone, you know, who would it be? You're about to, you know, play in the U.S. He said, I would love to play against Tiger Woods. You know, he's been, you know, my hero my entire life. That would be the thrill of a lifetime. I don't know if those are his words, but that was the sentiment behind it. And the way that Tiger received this information was basically like, as I put it in the book, as if Answer had taken a dump on his driver. Like that was the level of antagonism that he felt was coming at him. And he played with no mercy and no remorse. And he beat Abraham Answer. And at the end of it, he says to the press, well, he asked for it. He got it.
Right.
Basically as petty as it gets. But the other good one is this Gary Payton story that's not in the book, actually, is that basically his biggest rival, I believe, now works at the YMCA or the, you know, the Boys and Girls Club of America. This guy named, which is a fun headline in and of itself. Yes. But this guy named Keith Smith, he was recruited to Cal, which of course was Gary Payton's backyard. And, you know, GP was not. He went to Oregon State. And he spent 4 years of college trying to make Keith Smith's life a living hell. He went harder at him than anyone else because he was the representation of every phone call he didn't get, every recruiting letter he didn't get, every coach who didn't ask him out for a tryout. That was just Keith Smith, and that fueled him. You know, that was that petty motivation, right, can become fuel in some ways.
It seems like there are benefits to trash talking both ways, meaning if you're the recipient, it might motivate you more. But if if you're the guy who's giving it or the athlete that's giving it to someone who's perceived as weak, then it's going to help the athlete who's actually there are benefits to trash talking. Are there not?
Oh, there's no question. Absolutely. I mean, I get into the science and psychology of trash talk. I would say, though, the thing that's important is that would-be trash talkers, you know, ought to be more strategic, and or they can be more strategic and more effective if they actually understand how this stuff works. Because right. There's real psychology at play here, right? So what you're describing, the guy who's going at someone who is weak, who's maybe vulnerable, you know, absolutely. What you're trying to do, and this is basically what, you know, one aspect of someone like Kevin Garnett's game, is he was talking to guys trying to intimidate them. And what you're effectively saying is, the demands of playing against me are greater than the resources that you have. You do not have the resources to meet the demands of what I'm bringing to the table. And what happens physiologically and biologically is we enter into what's known as either a challenge or a threat state based on when stress is introduced. You know, we have one of two stress responses. And if you think you have the resources to meet the demand, you enter a challenge state. On the other side, you enter a threat state, and there's literally physiological differences in your body, downstream effects that happen as a result. Like your heart beats faster either way, but like your heart rate variability either goes up and goes down, which is a measure of efficiency. Your pulmonary vasculature either expands, and so blood can rush out to your extremities and you're ready to take something on, or it constricts. And what that does is it basically shunts the blood back to your internal organs, because in a threat state, and this is primal, we're basically preparing to be attacked. It's as if a lion is going to jump on us in the savannah. That is how our body reacts. And when that happens, there's major performance, you know, repercussions as a result of that. So there's no question. So like trying to make someone, so attacking someone who's vulnerable, who thinks they're vulnerable, or saying something that someone might have a doubt about, an insecurity, and you can say something that resonates with those doubts, that has real impact.
I got a million-dollar idea here, and I think you're just the person to come aboard on this. I think we should come up with some sort of metric for athletics on how susceptible you are to trash talk.
Okay.
And I mean, we'll give it a rating.
Okay.
Hold on. Mikey's got a business idea here, and he's giving you a chance to get in
at a
very early stage, Rafi. Okay? Do you want in with us, okay? Because you have to be the guy that does the research, all right?
Well, maybe we can recruit some, like, an AI model to help us with that.
Sure.
But it's to find those moments. But the truth, that is a question that I put to a lot of people, is, like, can you actually, like, find out, like, you know, analytics. Like, can we apply analytics to talking trash? Can we find out those moments where someone is going to be most susceptible? And I got a couple of interesting answers. The one that intrigued me the most, which is not like satisfying in and of itself, came from Shane Battier when he was still working, in the front office of the Miami Heat. And he was like, to tell you the truth, I have an idea along these lines. And I said, well, can you tell me about it? And he said, no, because I haven't given up on it yet. So he's still holding on to hope that this is a real thing that you can really find. When is a person most stressed? When they are most susceptible? Whether it's a trash talk or some other form of distraction. And of course, that's another pathway by which trash talk can work and have negative performance outcomes is distracting someone, stealing their attention. But I also had an interesting conversation with the head of the director of performance for the English and Wales Cricket Bureau. And you may not think about cricket as being a sport that talks a lot of trash, but actually there's a ton of trash talk in cricket. They call it sledging. If you think about it, it makes sense because it requires so much attention, you know, so much incredible like mental stamina and focus to play cricket because you're up there for hours and you make one mistake and you're done. And so I asked him something along those lines too, because he's a big analytics guy. And his response was interesting because what he said was basically like, it's not necessarily when to attack, but also when not to. So for example, in the seventh over of a cricket match, there's data that shows, it might not be the seventh, don't hold me to that, I'm making it up, but that, that teams score less than they do in every other over. So for whatever reason, they're not as engaged, they're more distracted, they're tired. So that's exactly when you do not want to talk trash, because then you would run the risk of increasing their motivation, of raising their arousal levels, getting them
they're already
up.
Down. You're right.
Yeah,
yes.
They're already down. So just as much as you want to figure out when to attack, and so the time too, for example, would be if someone's really hyped up, if they've got a ton going on, they're at like a high level of arousal and intensity, like maybe you can talk a little trash and push them over the edge. Because once you get above your peak performance state and there is like a peak level of anxiety that everybody has, there's dramatic declines in performance. So I think you're onto something. I mean, I think there's something there.
How long ago did you have this conversation with Shane Battier? How long ago?
A couple years.
Okay, Mikey, we got to get on this because Battier, I'm telling you, he's getting close, okay? Like, we got to get on this before he does.
We got to get in on the ground floor.
No, we have to do it and release it before Battier does. That's what I'm trying to tell you, all right?
That's right. It's a race now at this point.
It's a race to ridiculous analytics. Go ahead, Mikey.
I'm curious.
Ridiculous analytics. Sorry, go ahead.
No, ridiculous for now until we have it, and then it's not ridiculous because we're the ones making money off of it.
I mean, I'm just saying that's a good name for a firm is Ridiculous Analytics.
You're right.
I like that, yeah.
What do you got,
Mike? I'm curious. Just following up with that, I'm curious. I'm sure in all your conversations, you found a lot of guys that you're like, that was a great trash talker. That was a great trash talker. But were there a couple of names that came up as that's the guy they picked on? That's the guy everybody went after.
Yeah. That's a question that I asked almost every athlete that I spoke to. And everyone was very hesitant to talk about
the guy. They didn't want to give away their targets.
They didn't want to give it up. Right. They didn't want to give it up.
Yeah, but, Rafi, it's so funny. You're talking like it's so funny. We're discussing this, and I'll let you answer that in a second because Christian Wilkins, the Dolphins' great defensive tackle, was on with us this week, and he was like, "Oh yeah, like listen." If you're organized about it, I know the guys that are weak. I know the guys that can't handle it. I know their weaknesses. Absolutely. Like, these guys are studying this before the game. It's crazy.
No question. No question. And you have, I mean, you have tape on it. I mean, Steve Smith Sr., before every game that he played, he would watch tape of every defensive back that he was going to be going up against. And he wasn't just watching to see, like, well, what were the plays that, you know, someone caught a ball on them. He watched everything, and he was looking for everything, every ticks, every kind of any kind of like psychological giveaway. You know, he told me about one game he was watching. He was with the Ravens. It was his first game going up against Joe Hayden, and he had never really played against him, at least not when they were in the same division. And he was watching tape from a game the previous year when Hayden was matched up against Brandon Marshall, and he noticed something, which was Marshall caught a ball, and when they stood up, Hayden was trying to, you know, rip it away from him. And for whatever reason, Brandon Marshall just kind of like flinched at him. You know how you can like flinch at someone, and Joe Hayden flinched back, like, you know, like he involuntary flinch, like Matt Barnes never did when Kobe Bryant was throwing the ball in his face, right?
Right.
And Steve Smith said, "I'm latching on to that," and he basically, and his whole entire game plan against him was designed. Was designed to take advantage of that fact that he believed that Joe Hayden would be non-confrontational in that way. And the entire game, he actually, instead of talking, what he did was he was very physically aggressive and then didn't say anything because Joe Hayden kept being like, "Hey man, what's up? Why are you doing that? Like, we cool or what?" And Steve Smith said nothing. It's the same kind of mind game, but he knew it was just to a slightly different, line of attack. And then what happened is on the final drive of the game, Ravens are down going, or they're down or it's a tie game. And Joe Flacco asks Steve Smith in the huddle, you know, "What kind of route what do you want to run?" And he's like, "A sluggo." And, you know, a sluggo is basically like, it's a slant that goes into a go route. And so what he knew was that because of everything that he'd done to Joe Hayden that day, when he ran the sluggo and faked the slant, Joe Hayden was going to bite on it because he was going to give him space. And that's exactly what he did. And then he went for the go, caught like a 30-something yard catch and set up Justin Tucker for the for the game-winning field goal. So it's like that stuff is absolutely studied. There's no question.
Who's a guy that we'd be surprised, an athlete we'd be surprised was a great trash talker?
An athlete you'd be surprised was a great – well, I mean, Brian Scalabrine is pretty good. I don't know if that's a
Scal?
Yeah,
what was he talking trash about?
Scal talks a lot. But the thing is that Scal, he knew not to take anything personally.
Right.
He knew that, like, guys were gonna talk about him, and that is fine. Because if he gets involved emotionally in the game, this is a quote from him. He's like, "I'm not good enough, to get distracted with that kind of mano-a-mano crap. Like, right. I need to focus on my responsibilities." But he would say stuff like, "This guy can't go left. He can't go left." And knowing that it's basically he's presenting a challenge, he's going at the guy's ego. And guys have, elite athletes have such a hard time letting go of their ego, right? If you're telling them they can't do the thing, they're going to do the thing, even if it's wrong for the team and it's outside of the game plan. To go back to one of the what you were asking before we started talking about the Steve Smith thing, the one guy that, which I think brings up an interesting point about what might make someone vulnerable, is Gilbert Arenas told me that if he was in the league today, he would go after Russell Westbrook. And this was even a few years ago. Huh. And the reason is, and I don't think he's wrong. The reason is the way he put it is he becomes like a Ferrari in traffic or a Lamborghini in traffic. You know, he gets so revved up and so tunnel visioned that, like, he's overcome with all the anxiety of performance at that time.
It makes him a worse player.
Makes him a worse player, and he's being baited by pride. And that's the thing that I think, can really be detrimental. It's the same thing that Scal would do by saying you can't go left or give him that, give it to him. I'll give you that jump shot, right? Like, I mean, that's great trash talk, right?
I love Scal. Scal was kind of preparing for the trash talk. He wasn't actually giving it out, but he was preparing that guys were going to talk trash to him and just laughed it off, probably.
Oh, absolutely. Knew that it was a pure distraction. It should have nothing to do with him. But, you know, so was it last season that Russell Westbrook got so upset when everybody was calling him Russell Westbrick and, you know, talking to him, right? Like, the fact that he brought that up tells you that he's getting offended by something that he shouldn't be offended by. It's not that you're just you're broadcasting the fact that you're taking offense. Your pride is your weakness. Like, if you're, and he said that, he's like, I'm a prideful man. You know, like, this is my name. You're dishonoring my name. When you start talking about things like respect and honor, then guys are going to be, you know, guys are vulnerable. That's when, that's where you, if someone like LeBron James, same thing, says like, when things get disrespectful, that's where I draw the line. It's like, man, that's exactly what the whole point of this is.
I feel like on the opposite end of that is Kobe Bryant, who you start doing that and he would do it just to show you, and he could. And it would happen over and over.
Yeah. Well, I mean, someone like Kobe is someone you don't want to talk to, right?
Because exactly.
You know, he feeds off of it. And we say feed off of it, and it's kind of like a, you know, it's a generic, you know, term. But I'm talking about the science. Like, you literally, you can use it as a cue to, you know, refocus your attention. You can get yourself into the optimal zone of functioning, which is like a sports psychology term that talks about like being in a peak performance state. You know, Kobe wanted to humiliate you. You know, Kobe wanted to, he wanted you to engage so that he could show you just how much better than you than he was. He tried to bait Shane Battier. He tried to bait him every time they played. It would, you know, relentlessly, right? You know, one time he would be nice to him and cordial and friendly before a game. The next time he wouldn't say anything, be cold as ice. You know, he would step over him and, or, you know, hover over him for an extra half a beat when he fell on the floor or bump his shoulder into him. He was trying to bait him into a confrontation. But a guy like Kobe, just as much, you got to know who to go after. You got to know who to leave alone.
See, I like that list. Who do you leave alone? Like, it's not even worth it. Like, Jordan's got to be on that list. Kobe's got to be on that list.
Jordan, Mahomes. Right.
Yeah. Jordan, Mahomes, Kobe. Anyone who's going to engage, Draymond Green, Kevin Garnett, Gary Payton. I mean, all these guys who feed off of it. Like, you're giving them what they want. But, you know, John Stockton, who never said a word to Gary Payton, you know, Gary Payton, you know, to this day will admit that John Stockton got in his head because he never said anything. And he started thinking about it. He's like, why won't this guy talk to me? And suddenly, right, then he's thinking about something that has nothing to do with the game instead of his opponent doing it.
Rafi, before we let you go, and again, Trash Talk is available right now wherever you buy your books. Support this man. It's a good book. It's an interesting topic. Give me the Mount Rushmore of Trash Talkers.
Okay.
All right.
So I said before that you're right. Muhammad Ali's got to be on the list. He's the godfather of modern trash talk, both in terms of sort of like bringing it to a national and global audience, but also because the fact that, you know, he used trash talk in basically every possible way, he demonstrated all the functionalities of trash talk, right? For like self-promotion and hype and selling a fight, to getting in the guy's head, to trying to create motivation for himself. But even behind the scenes as a kind of like pro-social, just giving each other shit, right? They're like, that's a pro-social use of trash talk, to create, you know, bonds of intimacy and sort of in-group cohesion. So he did all of that. I'm going to put Gary Payton on the list as well. I don't think you can have a Mount Rushmore and not have GP.
You can't. Yes.
There's no way. You know, so I'm going to put him on the list. Grudgingly, I'm going to include Reggie Miller. Okay.
Why, you're a Knicks fan?
Yeah, I'm a Knicks fan.
Grudgingly, but he was great at it. He was great at it. He thrived on it.
He was great. And he's sort of like, he's more of like the pest instead of the intent, you know, a different kind of, not the intimidator, but the pest. Sure. You could put Sean Avery, you know, in that slot, someone like that. But Reggie Miller was, I mean, just look at the fact that, that Michael Jordan tried to gouge his eyes out. The fact that Reggie was able to get under MJ's skin, and nobody could do that. And MJ, for whatever reason, was not able to use, you know, Reggie's trash talk and the way he was others, you got to give him some credit for that. But I mean, at the same time, F Reggie. and then last spot, I want to give it to someone who maybe folks don't know as well. And that is a former U.S. soccer goalkeeper named Shep Messing. So he.
Oh, I know him well. I love Shep Messi, New York Arrows. Come on. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. So Shep is a guy that not a lot of people know. But so the reason that the U.S. Olympic men's team made its first ever Olympics in the qualifying era is because of trash talk. And right. It's because of Shep Messing. It's because in the 1972 qualifiers during the shootout to go, you know, to advance in the qualifying round, Shep Messing takes off his shirt, swings it around his head like a maniac, and goes out screaming at the guy who's about to take the kick, this guy named Mario Castro. And he so freaked him out that the guy missed the shot entirely. But that's just the beginning for Shep. Shep, who also studied psychology as an undergrad, he would look up, you know, like individual cultural sensitivities against, you know, the different team, you know, the different players he'd be going against, especially when he played, you know, with guys like Pele and you know, in the locker room with the Cosmos. He would just find out what will upset a German? What will upset an Italian guy? I just go directly at that. But he would just do the wildest stuff. Two other quick things. One is, so in corner kicks, he would like walk around sort of like with a dazed look on his face, mumbling to himself. And then he'd grab a guy and say, "Where am I?" He's like, "I haven't gotten any sleep. What's going on here?" And he wanted people to think he was a lunatic, like actually a lunatic, because then they'd stay a little bit away from him. They'd be a little bit afraid of him when they're going in for that, you know, for that crosser to get, you know, to put a head on it. But the most devious ploy that I've heard of comes from Shep Messing, which is he would go up to guys coming out of halftime, guys he knew, and he would do research into it, like where they lived. And he would say something to the effect of, "Oh man, I hope you didn't hear. There's a gunman in your neighborhood."
Oh, geez.
I know. It's a little more.
Next level shit, man.
Yeah. Well, because right. He's not making them mad. He's just making them worried.
Right.
And so yes. they're thinking about something else. I mean, that's an exact quote from Shep that he used in the playoffs in 1977 when he was playing with he was still playing in the NASL. So Shep belongs on that list too as an innovator.
All right, Mikey A, get Shep on the podcast, okay? Because I want to talk to him about trash talking. I've already reached out to Shane Battier. I want to have him on in a couple of weeks with Rafi so we can create this business, see where Battier's at with it, okay? And we can create this business together. But in the meantime, before we do all of that, okay, buy his book, Trash Talk. It's available right now wherever books are sold. I love that you're having a book signing with people who are going to heckle you. That is a great idea by you. Good luck with the book, man. This was great. Fascinating. Man, we appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it as well.
All right, and you're right, Reggie Miller. Stu Gatz here for my friends over at Miller Lite. A lot's changed over the years. One thing that hasn't, the great taste of Miller Lite. Another thing that hasn't changed is that it's less filling. So, what is the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite sparked this debate in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. For me, it is simple. What I want out of my light beer is ice cold and great taste, and that's exactly what I get from the original light beer, Miller Lite. Miller Lite keeps it simple, undebatable quality, great taste, only 96 calories. It's the beer that strips away everything you don't need and holds on to what matters most, a light beer that tastes like beer. You don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/stew, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.